for this meeting this morning. This is a meeting of the Portfolio Committee on Health to receive briefings from the SAMRC this morning, and at 2 o'clock to receive a briefing from SAPRA on their annual performance plans and their budgets for the financial year 2022 to 2023. Also welcome to all of the members of the public who have joined, and also the media houses. I see that we have Channel 405 Newsroom, Zoom on the platform, as well as Parliament YouTube. So, honourable members, I will ask you to switch on your cameras when you do speak, and that will be for all of our guests and those doing the presentations this morning, so that we are able to be able to see those who are speaking. So you're all very welcome to this meeting this morning. Ms. Majalamba is away on a bereavement leave, and we have Ms. Nombali Makubane, who will be introducing, giving our attendance and our apologies this morning. We will then, after that, go to our PLO, Mr. Joe Hutler, to tell us who has joined from the department side, if they have joined. And then we will go on to the business of the day. Ms. Makubane?
Good morning, Chair and the members. In the meeting, we have Dr. Jacobs, Mr. Munyai, Ms. Geller, Dr. Harvard, Mr. Siwela, Ms. Wilson, Ms. Ishmael, Dr. Tembekwayo, Ms. Shira. I have one apology from Mr. Van Staden.
Thank you very much. We also have an apology of Honorable Imam Sheikh, who will be in and out of the meeting due to participating in another meeting simultaneously. Thank you very much, honorable members, for attending this morning. Mr. Joe Hutler, do you have any members?
Yes, good morning. Good morning, honorable chair and honorable members. Yes, the department is represented by the director that is responsible for public entities and the staff from the ministry. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. And honourable members, before I'm going to welcome the representatives from the SAMRC, I would have to read through this preamble again to remind you that this virtual meeting is deemed in the precinct of Parliament and therefore constitutes a meeting of a committee of the National Assembly for official purposes only. In addition to the rules of virtual sittings, the rules of the National Assembly, including the rules of debate, apply. Members in a sitting of the National Assembly. Members should equally note that anything said in the virtual platform is deemed to have been said to the House, may be ruled upon. All members of logged in shall be considered to be present and are requested to mute their microphones and only unmute when requested to speak. This is because the microphones are very sensitive and will pick up noise which might disturb the attention of other members. When recognized to speak, please unmute your microphone and connect your video. Members may make use of the icons on the bar at the bottom of the screens, which has an option that allows a member to put up his hand in order to raise points of order. The secretariat will assist in alerting the chairperson to members requesting to speak. When using the virtual system, members are urged to refrain or desist from unnecessary points of order or interjections. I will now invite the President of the and CEO of the SAMRC, Professor Glenda Gray, and the Chair of the Board, Dr. Madikizela, to introduce the team and to take us forward into the presentation. We'll go straight to that presentation. We will allow you. It is now 9:35. we will allow you up to about quarter to 11, 10 to 11, so that we have enough time for interactions. And we are very mindful also of the load shedding, which would mean that some members are not present at the particular time and join later, or some lost their connectivity in between. So we managed to do that yesterday, and we'll do our best to do the same today. And we hope to finish at about 5 minutes to 12 today. Thank you very much. You're very welcome.
Thank you very much.
Chair, are you able to hear me?
Yes, we are able to hear you fully. I don't know who was doing the introductions of your team.
Yeah, we just had a bit of load shedding, so we're back in, and I want to introduce my chair, Professor Johnny Mashangu, and we have other members of the board here, Professor Linda Skull, Professor Eunice Dekwi, Professor Khaled Dandara, Professor Emmanuel Makeva, Dr. MZ Marikazela, and Ms. Jean Williams. And I'm going to hand over to my chair, who's going to start the presentation introduce the first part of the presentation. So thanks. Over to you, Johnny. Thanks very much.
Yeah, just my apology to you, Johnny, Dr. Mashangu. I did say the wrong name there, the president, as the chair, but you're welcome. Thank you.
So, Johnny, I'll advance this, the slides for you. Are they showing?
Yes, they are showing. Thank you very much. And good morning, honorable members of the Portfolio Committee on Health. Thank you, Honorable Chair Dr. Jacobs, for inviting us to this accountability interface. I'm accompanied by several MRC board members, and of course, this is the accounting authority, and of course, the MRC executive members who are led by Professor Gray. Mine is to make a few welcome remarks and then hand over to the Executive Management Committee team members to take you through the detailed presentation. I hope you have received the 10-part electronic document comprising 113 pages that has been sent through to you. The focus today is going to be the annual performance plan, which is detailed in sections C and G. And we hope that we have actually supplied enough data and information to give you the comfort that the MRC continues to execute its mandate in a committed and exemplary fashion. Next slide, please.
We just want to know who, we think that who's sharing at the moment. I think we just stopped this. We're on another computer. We just had to move to another computer. So we're just going to stop sharing. Sorry, Chair.
No problem.
Just exit that computer and let's stop sharing. Just exit, I think. Close that. There we are. Okay. Can you see now?
No, I'm still seeing slide number two. Yes. You stop sharing. If you can reshare.
We're going to reshare now.
You can move straight to slide number four.
Okay. Again, can you see that now?
We're seeing the first slide. If you can just advance to slide number four.
Okay. Sorry. We just had to swap computers because of load shedding. Okay. There we are. We're going to go to slide four.
Slide four, please.
Okay, there we are. Thanks.
Thank you very much. The MRC annual performance plan is drawn from the current 2020-2024 five-year strategic plan that we have. The annual performance plan reflects the strategic goals and objectives that we endeavor to achieve in the current 2022-23 financial year. The annual performance plan was developed by the executive committee members under the guidance of the board and is endorsed by the Minister of Health, who is our executive authority. Next slide, please. The board would like to highlight several areas of focus in this financial year. Firstly, obviously, we do need to execute our strategic plan, which has reimagined the organization and set it to make further impact in the disease burden in South Africa. And secondly, we are focused on transformation in science, in particular, by responding to the national context. We are looking at the science landscape and where interventions are needed. We are set to increase the small critical mass in our continent. And thirdly, we are mindful of the fiscal constraints that all of us function under. In this regard, in fact, we continue to be prudent as to where the allocations to the MRC is actually used. You will see in the presentation that less than 20% is actually used in administration. So the lion's share is actually going towards the conduct and the funding of the research, which is our mandate. And then lastly, we are committed to decreasing the disease burden in South Africa through a number of interventions. Cutting edge innovations is one, and you've seen recently the rollout of the vaccines, the improvement in the diagnostic landscape, and many others that you'll hear about. Next slide, please. This is not possible, of course, without a very sound and stable governance framework. The MRC board takes the lead in supporting the organization in executing all of its mandate. The board, of course, is then mandated to work together with the executive committee under the leadership of our CEO, Professor Gray, and you'll hear more about what they have achieved in this financial year. Next slide, please. The board members, of course, are predominantly non-executive board members. These are distinguished scientists, and of course, we do have legal and financial expertise within the board. We work within the framework of health in South Africa, and therefore, in all of what we do, we include the National Department of Health, who are present in many of our activities, including all of our board meetings. Next slide, please. The SAMRC board, for those honorable members that have not met them before, are shown here. We do have seven of these board members in this meeting today. Next slide, please. They constitute themselves into three highly functional committees. These are the Audit, Risk and IT Committee, the HR and Remuneration Committee, as well as the Research and the Development Committee. Chair, that is all I wanted to share with you. I would now hand over to the CEO to take you through the remainder of the presentation. Over to you, Professor Gray.
Thank you, Chair. Are you able to hear me?
We can hear you very well.
Great, thank you. So thank you very much, Chair, and we want to just acknowledge the great work that the board has done and the support, how supportive the board is of our work. And we're very grateful for the good governance that the board has given us. So we just want to acknowledge the board and acknowledge the effort that you put into making sure that the MRC flourishes. So just a great an acknowledgement to everybody who's on the who's here present and those who could not make it. So I'm just going to just talk about our strategic plan and just to emphasize that the APP that we present reinforces our efforts across the five strategic programs of our MRC, and that is to make sure that we administer the health research in an effective and efficient manner and make sure that the research money goes to the researchers and doesn't get stuck in administration. We're committed to the generation of new knowledge and not only just generating new knowledge, but to make sure we translate what we learn into policy and practice. We committed in supporting innovation and technology transfer in South Africa, and we have a vibrant program that ensures that our innovations get to people, and we'll talk about that a bit later. But of course, we can't do research in South Africa if we don't build sustainable health researchers, and we've committed to capacity development and to making sure that the researchers, health researchers in South Africa, reflect the demographic and the geography of our country. And as I've mentioned before, we also committed to research translation. So we have pioneered cutting-edge innovations. We've contributed the development of novel treatment regimens, vaccine development and testing, diagnostic tools, new drugs and devices. And this is all aimed at the improvement of the health status of people in South Africa. We have a mid-career scientist program that looks at as health scientists in their mid-career and gives them grants to enable them to become the next science leader in the country. Transformation in science is a critical part of our strategy. And we are seeing that by interventions that more women and Black South Africans are the beneficiaries of our Masters and Doctors program. And one of our flagship programs is the Bongani Mayosi program, which aims at getting clinical people in the clinic or people in the hospital to become research vibrant. And we've had 47 graduates, and 87 of these have been in PhDs and in various health professions, dentists, doctors, OT, nurses. And of these 38 women that have completed, 16 have been Black South Africans. So because of the tight fiscal environment, we want to make sure that we are efficient and that we have clean audits and that we are always guided by the PFMA. We have forged partnerships over many frontiers, both north, south, southeast, south, south, and we remain, and these all remain critical in furthering our mission as we roll out our strategic plan. During COVID, we reorientated our research funding to allocate researchers to surveillance, the development of diagnostics, therapeutics, immunological research, and vaccine development. And we collaborate with BioVac and Afrigen in the establishment of the mRNA hub in South Africa as an endeavor to support vaccine development on the continent beyond COVID, and also looking at other diseases like TB and HIV and malaria. And we've also forged a collaboration with Patrick Soon-Shiong to develop a scholarship program that will advance the development of biomanufacturing capability in our country and enhance our capability in vaccine discovery, evaluation, and manufacturing. We have, you know, our APP has been approved by our Minister of Health. We also have had the APP tabled in Parliament. And I'm now going to talk about how we govern our research. And so we have a mandate to fund and conduct research in South Africa. We focus on the top 10 causes of death and disability and associated risk factors. And the data that we use must be accurate so that it can inform policymakers. Our mission, I want to just emphasize, is to advance the nation's health and quality of life, as well as addressing the inequity by conducting and funding relevant and responsive research, and then also to ensure that we address capacity development and innovation and research translation. We operate under the South African Constitution, specifically the Bill of Rights, the Chapter 10, Public Administration, and Chapter 13, Finance. Other legislative mandates that we operate under include the National Health Act, our MRC Act, Intellectual Property, Employment Equity, the Basic Conditions of Employment, the PFMA, Relevant Treasury Guidelines, the Patents Act, the Copyright Act, the Poppy Act, and others that are important. We contribute to the National Development Plan. We also contribute to the NHR policy and the National Health Insurance Bill, and also ensure that our research addresses the issues of SDGs, particularly good health and well-being, gender equality, reduced inequalities, and climate action. In terms of our medium-term strategic framework between 2020 and 2025, we focused on the strengthening of our governance system, ensuring that we've increased the gross expenditure on research and development, building programs and interventions at universities. We've also made sure that we have we've consolidated our social wage for quality basic services, and we work with Nihawu at the MRC. In terms of we're supporting enterprise development on townships, we address the BBBEE program in as a priority 5. Priority 6, there's representation of designated groups across occupation levels, and we'll speak a little bit more later on our HR practices and transformation agenda. And then we're also committed to investment for certain sections of the economy, and this will particularly be around the vaccine manufacturing and the mRNA hub and other vaccine platforms that we are involved in. In terms of our policy mandates, you know, we contribute government to government with bilateral agreements with many countries, particularly the BRICS, we've emphasized. We also work in SADC and also work in the rest of Africa with the AU and the Africa CDC. In terms of our BRICS program, we work in TB with Russia and India. We work in HIV also with India, childhood obesity in India and China, NCDs. We collaborate also with China and India, and genomics and COVID research. We've been engaged in the BRICS area, notably with China and their inactivated vaccine. In terms of WHO, we represent we are represented in their TB program and sit on some of their strategic boards to address issues around TB R&D, TB vaccines, and to continue emphasizing the need for TB research for treatment. As we move forward with climate change and in the future, we're seeing the emergence of antimicrobial resistance. And so the MRC funds both surveillance in South Africa on antimicrobial resistance and programs, but also collaborates at a global level to bring repurposed antibiotics and new antibiotics into the market for low and middle income countries. And for this, I sit on the global and antibiotic R&D platform that spearheads this at a global level. We also work with them at a local level on antibiotics, particularly in nosocomial infections and in the neonatal ICUs in the hospitals in our country. We continue to collaborate with many funders, including the NRF, the NIH, the Canadian Institute for Health Research, EDCTP, the Gates Foundation, the Newton Fund, UK MRC Solidarity Fund, the Elmer Philanthropies, and the Michael and Susan Dell Foundation to leverage work where there is common interest. We also support the interventions of other government departments, especially the Department of Science and Innovation and the Department of Higher Education. And we've also worked with the Department of Basic Education, particularly around the schools during COVID. We collaborate with the NRF and other science councils and the universities in South Africa. In terms of our policy mandates, we adhere to the National Health Act and all the other acts that I think I've mentioned before in one of my previous slides. We also support, in terms of our governance, we have a research misconduct policy. We have a knowledge, information, and data management policy. We are developing guidelines on gene editing. We adhere to the South African GCP, and we have an open access policy to ensure everybody in South Africa and on the continent can access the publications that we fund. We have a business continuity plan, and we've implemented a mandatory workplace policy on COVID vaccination, which we can also talk about later. In terms of the the report. I'm going to go to part C here. And just to say that we take these interactions with the Parliamentary Committee very seriously, and we note all the recommendations made by the Parliamentary Committee. And this slide just shows you some of the issues that you brought up last year and our response on the right. And just to say that we really enjoy these interactions with you, and your interventions do result in actions from the MRC side. In terms of human resources, I'm going to again hand over to Ntoza, who's our new HR executive. I'm going to also to come sit. Can you sit here, Ntoza? Can you see? I'm not too sure if you can see there, but it's over. Sorry. We play musical chairs here because of the our power outage.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Brenda. Good morning, honorable members. I'm Ntoza Pam, the executive director, human resources. I'll take you through a few slides that talks to human resources, MRC. You see there the executive management committee, sometimes called top management of MRC, Professor Lizel Zucker, who's the extra mural research unit and internal portfolio, who started this year, 1st of February 2022. And then Dr. Michelle Melder, who's been with MRC but moved to the top management, June 2021. Mr. Nick Cook, Chief Financial Officer, Prof. Angela Mate, who's our Executive Director, Transformation, Mr. Mzimhle Mpopo, who's our Legal Counsel, and Dr. Mongezi Mdluli, who's our Chief Research Operations Officer. Thank you. This slide is the headcount of MRC is about 624 as at 31st of March 2021. The emphasis there on professional, qualified specialists and skilled, technical, academic qualified. It's a pipeline that is a feeder to the top management and the senior management levels of the of our organization. Briefly, as you can see there, that the African females is about 40 that are now currently professionally qualified specialists, and Indians are 25 females. Colored is 26, and white is 27. If you look at our skilled, technical, academically qualified, 110 is Black African females. Indian females is 28. 45 is colored females, and 6 is white females. The emphasis there is that the deliberate and structured talent management that MRC is embarked upon recognizes that it takes a long time to develop scientists. So this is a very good pipeline to address the senior management, where we need to ensure that we address the imbalances and ensure that the demographics are diversified for MRC. Thanks, Moses. This slide is talking to the gender as well as the race of MRC. You can see there that close to 50% of the headcount of MRC is actually Black, the product definition. And 10% is white, 22%. There it's, where's it now? It's colored. And then, 13% is Indians in our employ. And then in terms of the gender, we've got more females, about 20%, and then 30%, is males. Thank you. The top management, of MRC that I talked about earlier on, 37%. We've come a long way since 2014. We have transformed the top management of MRC. We have 37% Africans, and then we've got 25% colored, and we've got 37% white colleagues, and then at this point in time, we do not have Indians. And then if you look at the gender side, 62% of the top management is females, one African female, two colored females, and two white females. And then we've got 37.5% of our male colleagues and 2 Africans and 1 white. Thank you, Mona. This is the last slide from the HR side of things. It's senior management without the top management as at the 31st of March 2021. 51% of our senior management is male, and then there's a good balance where we have close to 49% being female. So from the gender point of view, we are balancing nicely there. And then if you look at the other side of the race, this is where work needs to be done. We continue to strive. And with a very good pipeline here, as I said earlier on, where we need to have 44% of our senior management is currently white. And then we have 6% African, 16% Indian, and 20% are colored, and foreign nationals is 12%. Thank you very much.
Your time.
Thank you, Glenda. If you look at our talent management, we are concentrating on the natural attrition and our retirement. If you look at the cohort of the white colleagues, about 60% in the next 5 years are going to retire. Hence, we've got this deliberate integrated talent management to ensure that when we have opportunities, then we address the not only science, but also address transformation. Thank you.
So we're going to ask Angie Mattie. Angie, are you on?
She was even,
she's been having some. So we'll advance the slides for you. So we would like to introduce Prof. Angie Mattie. She is our She sits on the EMC and she represents the portfolio of transformation. So, Angie, over to you.
Thank you. Next slide, please. Thank you. I'd like to talk just a little bit about what we've achieved over our past 5-year transformation strategy and our thinking as we are crafting our new transformation strategy for 2022 to 2026. But first, I'd like to just say that the MRC is currently in the process of reviewing and reimagining how we structure the intramural space and how we arrange them. So we've established a working group back in February this year, and they are tasked with undertaking a broad consultation process across all our units and to propose a revised structure for the MRC. They will also be considering the financial, the human resources, and the transformation implications of the structure that they propose. And they are also required to evaluate the risks and propose risk mitigation strategies. So we're expecting that report from the committee to be submitted to the EMC in June of this year. The next slide, please. So our past strategy, 2017 to 21, has yielded some progress. We've increased the proportion of Black Africans overall in, as Ntoza Bam said earlier on, in the semi-skilled, skilled, technical, and professional categories, and that will provide us with a feeder group to address the senior management category, which will be the key focus of our strategy over the next 5 years. We've increased the proportion of Black Executive Management Committee members. The majority of our funding for management and leadership, about 72%, now goes to Black Africans. We have awarded flagship projects for emerging scientists that provides them with an extraordinary opportunity to grow as leaders in science. And we've increased our scholarships and grants to Black African students and researchers. And then we also have had a special program for HDIs, giving support in terms of capital equipment, operational support, and capacity development through a range of programs, including our wastewater surveillance program. So for the upcoming 5-year strategic period for transformation, we will, of course, continue with the current projects that have proven to be effective, such as the Executive Management Committee scrutiny of all senior appointments to make sure that transformation has been considered, supporting further education, providing leadership and management skills, and a range of other initiatives. Going forward, we are broadening and deepening our approach to transformation. We will be focusing on matters such as unconscious bias to reduce prejudice within the organization from invisible factors, and we'll be providing training in that regard. We'll also be focusing on intrapersonal development, ensuring that these higher levels of self-awareness and self-knowledge as a powerful platform for self-improvement. Reflection at the level of team and the level of the individual will be important in that regard, and also identifying people's personal individual strengths, helping them to build those so that they become as powerful as they can be within the organizations. Research going forward will focus mainly on teams, so we need to make sure that our teams are as strong as possible, and so we'll be cultivating skills like emotional intelligence, teams coaching, and listening skills. And then in addition to the past, where we focused mainly on redress of past wrongs and prejudice, we're now also having a future focus, so we want to make sure that our organization is fit for the 21st century, which is going to be so strongly characterized by volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity. So what we've done to date is embark on a widespread consultation process in the organization to understand the invisible barriers to flourishing, people's lived experiences within the organization, and we've expanded our definition to include the future. We have a multidimensional approach that looks at systems, individuals, groups, and people's beliefs and worldviews. Professor Glenda Gray has taken a number of steps to strengthen the machinery for transformation, including appointing holding the transformation office within her own office, appointing an executive director for transformation, strengthening our transformation forum, and ensuring that transformation is a partnership of the transformation office, human resources, and finance. Human resources will lead a process on culture and values, and we've had a couple of pilot initiatives. They're very, very promising, so that is enthusing us substantially, and we'll have programs that are directed at both individuals as well as our key target groups in senior management. Next slide, please. And this is just to say that we're also taking up our broad-based Black economic empowerment compliance. And this is a letter from the agency appointed to review the MRC in this regard. So this process is underway. That's it from me.
Thank you. Ask President Wiesel to take us to the next section.
Thank you very much, Professor Gray. Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee. It's my pleasure to present a few slides on our extramural research unit, and it is appropriate to put this after the transformation because it actually speaks directly to the tangible plans that we have instituted in this regard. The slide actually shows that very well, where you can see depicted here some of our new units. This was in 2019, combination of units that were awarded in 2018 and then 2019. But it speaks to two very specific strategic strategies. The one is to increase women unit directors, and the second is to increase Black African unit directors. It's important to bear in mind that our unit directors are world-class scientists in this field. They have all been internationally peer-reviewed, and the science that are being produced are of the highest level, and again, appropriate for our country, our global region, with international impact. The other thing to also note is that these units become incubators of our future scientists, and also create links between the SAMRC and all the tertiary institutions that they represent. In this photograph, again, are the women unit directors. This was a strategic call in 2018 for women that resulted in some excellent applications. We were able to award 3 full units and 3 half units. And then this is our most recent call, again, focused call for Black, African Black extramural unit directors. We had 4 shortlisted unit directors. All of them were funded because of their incredibly high level of scientific expertise, and more so also the fact that they represent areas of need in our health agenda. So I will introduce you to them from the University of Johannesburg, Professor Nancy Kaswana Mafuya. You can see her area is in epidemic research, which is critical. Professor Colette Dandara, pharmacogenomic research and translational research, again, particularly important, as is the intersection between non-communicable diseases and infectious diseases. The unit director is Professor Ntubeko Ntusi, and then from the University of Venda, Professor Pascal Bassong, who is focusing on antimicrobial resistance and, of course, global health research, all critically needed in our country and in our region. Just to give you a sense of the demographic profile of our extramural unit, unit directors, interestingly enough, more than half of them are Black, and 36% of them are women. This is getting closer to being aligned with our demographic representation of the country, but I can assure you this is substantially more than you will encounter at health faculties at other institutions. If we look at the hosting institutions of our extramural research units, again, you note the geographic diversity with many of the institutions such as Tshwane, University of the Western Cape, Venda being represented. Finally, I just want to point out 1 or 2 of our unit directors and their areas of expertise. In UCT, you may recognize Professor Kelly Shibale, involved in vaccine work for malaria. Under the WITS group, you may recognize Professor Karen Hoffman, who has worked quite closely in the NHI research area. The University of Tshwane, represented by Professor Alvaro Fuyun, works on herbal medicines. Professor Oko from Fort Hare University on water safety, quite crucial. NICD, Professor Lynn Morris and Professor Slim Karim have been very involved, obviously, over the last 2 years in the COVID response. University of Pretoria, I draw your attention in the middle to Professor Zodwa Dlamini. She represents the Pan-African Cancer Research Institute. And of course, a strong focus these days on mental health. We have Professor Soraya Sidak from the University of Stellenbosch in the red square. Again, we focusing particularly on cardiometabolic health. It's a major burden of disease. And Professor Tanda Machwa was one of the winners of the 2018 Call for Women, is based at the Cape Peninsula University of Technology. So I just wanted to draw your attention to those, and I'm going to hand over to the next slide to Professor Glenda Grace. Thank you.
It's Mongezi.
Thank you, Chair and honorable members, and also I'd like to thank our board. So as the MRC, we do not operate in a vacuum. What we have to do, we have to look at the landscape. So we both look at the external landscape as well as the internal one. Just basically, you know, the important thing is to work with the National Health Research Committee, which sets up the research agenda for the country, working under the auspices of the National Department of Health. And we also have to support the changing needs, as has happened not a long time ago with COVID. Obviously, we had to adapt our research to respond to the changing health needs. The surveys we conducted, a couple of surveys, including the TB prevalence survey, we also funding the National Injury and Mortality Survey in the organization. As Prof. Gray indicated, that we are researching on top 10 causes of mortality, and we also in planning to reduce morbidity and improve the health outcomes. I think the important one is also making sure that we adapt our business activities with the fourth industrial revolution. And you'll see that when we present on our innovation side, how we are responding to that. The next slide is looking at our internal environment. So we are focusing on funding innovation, as Prof. Dre indicated. We also want to increase the number of PhDs in the organization. As a knowledge-based organization, we have to make sure that our researchers have got PhDs. And this is also driven under the auspices of our strategic goal number 4. Research translation is important. You know, if you have research and the research that is not translated into policy and practice, it means absolutely nothing to the country. We have to make sure that we practice the citizenship by making sure that we translate research into policy and practice. Open science is quite an important one. There are lots of engagement, making sure that the data is open, and this has become quite important during the COVID pandemic, when research was moving so fast that the sourcing of information was quite important. So if you have information that's openly available to all to access for the better of the future of our people. Also important when you look at the POPIA that has just been promulgated last year, the data security use and transfer is quite important, making sure that data that we collect, particularly in our institution where we work with the participants, that we secure their data. And many other things, including maternal and child health, we'll talk about it later on, where we'll show you the examples how we did it on the perinatal mortality. The mental health, I mean, it has become quite important. We've done survey on the universities in the country, but also we are planning to open a research chair in Limpopo on mental health. I think we spoke about the environmental health under the SDGs, and also making sure that we get vaccines for some of the neglected diseases. So the SWOT analysis, I would not go through the entire SWOT analysis, but safe to say that we really value the excellent working relationship between the MRC, the board, and the portfolio committee, as well as the NDOH, as our strength. We also making sure that we have to align our research to the fourth industrial revolution, as I've said, and also make sure that we support the National Department of Health in terms of the NHI and UHC. So although we put it as our weakness, we're just trying to make sure that we keep a focus on it. I think the threats are quite more important. The diminishing funding is quite an issue. Data security, possibility of scientific misconduct, and as well as the cybersecurity. So how do we measure our performance? Firstly, we measure performance through the strategic goals. It has always been our aim to make sure that throughout the period we get a clean audit, and making sure also that we do not spend money on administration, but we focus our money, most of our money, on research. So having said that, what we would like to do is, and what we've been doing all the years, is to make sure that 80% of our budget is spent on research and 20% on administration. And we also consistently want to achieve clean audit, as it's indicated in this slide. And you would see that we managed over the MTF, the past MTF, to go below the 20%. And in this current financial year, 22, that's under review. We're also hoping to be under 20%, and also looking at the medium-term framework until the end of our strategic plan. And then goal 2, that's where we produce our publications. And also, we've got a strategic plan for 5 years. You will see the column on your right-hand side, the last column. These are the outputs that we'd want to achieve over the 5-year period. And just to indicate that it's broken down into a couple of years. We're currently concentrating on 21-22, which is under review with the AG, and they're forward looking, you know, produce about 700 for the indicator 2.1.1 and other outputs as we've indicated for other indicators. And then this is what we do. I mean, we, you know, during COVID, we managed to produce quite a high impact publications, looking at the, you know, effectiveness of some of the COVID vaccines and also the immunogenicity, as Prof. Clay alluded to earlier on with,
I don't know, Chair, can you still hear us? We still just had a load shedding.
We can hear you very well. Thank you. Please continue. Could you hear me there, Mongezi? Anyone from the SAMRC?
Can you hear us?
Chair, can you hear us?
We can hear you very well.
Okay, so we just had load shedding, so I'm just changing the computers. Can I carry on?
Yes, please do. Let's see how it goes.
Okay, thanks, Chair. Apologies for the load shedding. Can you see the slides, Chair?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Okay. So then the next slide is our goal 3, which is innovation. And you know, we want to make sure that we fund innovation, as I've indicated earlier on. So these are our outputs over the 5-year period on innovation projects that we would like to fund, and this next slide talks to the. The indicators relating to strategic goal number 3. And then this slide here, we'll talk about the slide in on slide 83 when I give over to Dr. Michelle Mulder to talk about the innovation projects alongside with the messenger RNA and other activities under innovation. And then goal 4, this is growing a pipeline of our scientists. Again, you know, Chair, we've been really positive disruption here to make sure that, you know, as Prof. Zulke indicated earlier on, in some areas we are having a director call. In this case here, you know, making sure that we grow our African as well as Black scientists. So this is the funding for growing a pipeline along the strategic focus.
Sorry for the interjection. Could we try to see if we can get the echo away? Does somebody have another device on in the vicinity where you're speaking?
Is it still echoing, Chair?
It's better now, thank you.
Okay, thanks, Chair. Apologies for that. Sorry, it's a load shedding. And then, Chair, this is just to show some of our outputs in terms of funding under the Goal 4. You know, some of our students, they managed to get doctorates and others masters from different institutions, as indicated on the slide there. And then Goal 5, research translation, as we also indicated as one of our weaknesses. We're saying that because we never had it as a goal before, but we currently have it now on our 5-year strategic plan, making sure that we translate our research into policy and practice. And these are the indicators under that strategic goal. And then, you know, to show that what we've done These are some of our outputs in terms of informing policy and programs, and also looking at the environment, environmental research under the sustainable development goals. And then this is one of the key projects or key programs that happened over the year, particularly during COVID, that informed, you know, several lockdowns, where we looked at the causes of death over time, and, you know, and informed the policymakers in terms of the lockdown rules and so on. And then, Chair, I would head over to Mr. Nick Greek to talk to the finance slides. Nick, over to you.
Thank you very much, and good morning, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. I'll just take you briefly through the finances of the organisation, and also our budget for 22-23 and our financial strategy. Next slide, please. I think from a budget strategy point of view, I think we've seen some significant investment both by government and other funders over the last 2 years in the lockdown period, which has been very useful for us in terms of our COVID research. But as you'll see just now, we are reverting to almost pre-COVID funding levels, which means that we've got to keep a very tight control over our funding. And as a result of that, we're obviously, from a headcount point of view, we're only funding critical new posts, and then that is funded through a reduction in vacant posts, so that we don't see an overall growth in our headcount, particularly over this tight fiscal period that we're currently in. We are giving priority to projects which obviously leverage funding. So, in other words, we will contribute a portion of money, and the collaborator will contribute at least that same amount of money. And we're seeing that it's been very, very useful, and obviously helps us to double the investment in some areas, and also serves with a lot of the funding coming through the SAMRC. It's had a very, very beneficial effect on our income growth. We will continue to fund COVID research. As the President has spoken, we have put into significant investments in COVID over the last couple of years, and we will continue to do so through contributions not only from national government, but also from other funders over the MTF period, although that will not be to the same level. We will also continue to use our reserves to invest in our infrastructure to obviously generate high-quality research outputs. Over the last few years, we've consolidated all our staff into own facilities in the Cape Town, Durban, and Pretoria areas, and we are renovating those buildings to facilitate research in that, as well as invest in IT and laboratory equipment, particularly in genomics and other areas, which are generating high-quality outputs. In 22-23, we have budgeted for a deficit of 18.9 million. And this deficit will be funded from from the MRC reserves, and obviously without putting any additional strain on the fiscus for the new financial year. Next slide, please. This is the critical slide, which basically shows the numbers in detail. You can see that our last audited outcome, which was 2021, we generated a 79 million surplus compared to a 3.3 million budget deficit, which resulted in, if you recall, we received a lot of significant funding right towards the end. I think it was March 2021, where we received 150 million from national government for COVID research, and then another 150 million one-off in the current financial year. And that resulted in our applying for a budget deficit in 2021-22. And you can see that our budget adjustment, which was approved, is for a deficit of 122 million rand, as we've received approval for the carryover of those funds to be invested in the current financial year. And you can see that in the 2021 financial year, as I mentioned, we've received significant transfers received of 851 million from national government, But in 22-23, you can see that drops back to 779 million in the 2022-23 financial year. And extrapolating that out, you can see that we've only got a 0.7% increase in our base. Sorry, that's a decrease in our baseline grant, which means that in real terms, our baseline grant has fallen back to pre-COVID levels and in real terms has decreased. We are, however, will continue to fund deficits over the MTF period from our own reserves to ensure that we meet our current contractual commitments. However, as you will understand, that is not sustainable going forward further out than the MTF period. Next slide, please. So if I look at the overall summary from over the last 3 or 4 years and then projecting into the future, we've seen a revenue increase of 5.1% on average and a baseline grant increase of 10.9% on average. And that's due to the last 2 years' worth of one-off injections by national government, for which we're very grateful. That has helped us with our COVID-19 projects. And our sale of goods and services, which is our current contract research funding, has decreased by 2.1% on average over the last few years. Then projecting going forward, our total revenue projected to increase only by 0.3% on average due to the decrease in baseline funding, which is declining by 0.7% over the MTF period due to the project-specific funding no longer continuing. And then our contract fund research funding will increase by 0.6% on average. So you can see that our revenue over the MTF period will be under strain, which will mean that, as I say, our deficits will be funded from reserves. And so we will try to maintain our expenditure as far as possible, but obviously that it's not sustainable for any length of time. Our total expenditure increased by 8.1% up to 21-22. We have maintained tight control of employee costs, as I mentioned before, which have only grown by 3.4% on average, in line with the our fiscal direction from government. We've maintained tight control in that area, and our goods and services increased by 9.8% on average. On the expenditure side, in line with the lower projected revenue, we are expecting our expenditure decrease by 0.7%. That's in line with the lower income. Our compensation of employees will increase slightly to 6.5% on average. However, spending on goods and services, we are projecting a decrease of 8.2% on average over the MTF period. If one looks at the breakdown of our expenditure and our budget expenditure for 22-23 in line with the our key objectives, Mongezi did mention a 20% target of administration costs. So we've managed to maintain below that. In fact, our expenditure average over the last 3 to 4 years has been 16.3%. So we continue to drive efficiencies through our support costs and efficiencies into our processes to keep those costs low to maximize the money that goes into research. Core research takes up the bulk of our spending of 58%, down slightly to 53.6% over the MTF period. Innovation and technology sitting at 19.8% of the total, going up slightly to 22.8% over the MTF. Capacity development, these are the two areas where we are seeing the biggest growth, although they're coming off a low basis, 5.7% going to 6.5%. And then research translation, which has only recently added to our strategic objectives, going from 2.1 million, which is obviously a pretty low percent of the total, jumping to 4.3 million and a growth rate of 25.9% over the MTF period. And obviously, we continue to invest strongly in these new growth areas, objectives as we move forward. We do have a very rigorous risk management process where every year we go to the board And there's a lot of discussion around a strategic risk register. And these are the strategic risks for 21-22. Our new risk register is going to the board for approval over the coming weeks. And you can see that we do have, although there are some 22 risks for 21-22, we only have approximately six risks above the P3 level and none at the P1 level, which are critical. Our risk management appetite says we are comfortable with risk at the P4 level, and we take actions to obviously reduce the risks at a P2, P3 level. Next slide, please. I think that covers the finance slides, and I'll hand back to you, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Make an interjection here. Professor Gray, we at slide 68. You have 133 slides. I am a bit concerned with our time constraints, as I mentioned earlier, with the load shedding affecting our members. Maybe we can see how we can speed up a bit. Thank you. You actually have 20 minutes left. Did anyone hear me? Honourable members, can you hear me speaking?
We can hear you, Chair.
Yes, Chairperson.
Yes, have we then lost the team at the SAMRC?
We can hear you. There's echo there.
Yes. Thank you very much. I think some of these slides, I had a look at your presentation, and I think some of those slides with the pictures, etc., you should skip.
Yeah, we're going to skip them. We'll skip them. I'm going to this slide just shows you this slide just shows you the spend in diagnostics and in COVID. We won't go through this. You've got a copy of that. And we're going to the next slide. This just shows you some of the investments you've made. I'm going to skip through the surveillance, but to make an emphasis on the investment in genomic surveillance that helped us identify Omicron and the Beta variant. Go. And it just shows you how many genomes we've been able to conduct in South Africa. South Africa has been very prolific in doing this. Next slide. And this just shows you the data coming out of our surveillance and showing you the emergence of the Omicron variant in the past. We can go through that. Can we just move that through on? This shows you our diagnostics, our investment in diagnostics and in immunology of COVID and COVID vaccination. Next slide. And then our investment in both treatment and therapeutics. Next slide. And also in vaccine clinical studies, and most notably the Sasanke. We also want to acknowledge SAHPRA, who were a critical partner in helping us execute this ambitious study. And this, we were able to use Sasanke to evaluate other vaccines and even evaluate half-dose vaccines in the BASIS study, where we're looking at full-dose Pfizer or half-dose Pfizer after priming with the AD26 vaccine, and some collaborations with other people, including China with Sinovac, Moderna, and with other mRNA interventions, and now just shortly collaborating with Australian academics looking at their vaccine platform for children. This just shows you the data in South Africa. The two-dose Pfizer versus the two-dose J&J. This is in press in the NHJM, but reassures the parliamentary committee and the government that both vaccines that we have in our country were effective against admissions, hospitalization in during Omicron. So this is very important and reassuring data. Next slide. And this just shows you the innovations that we have. Are you going to do this one? And I'm going to hand over to Michelle.
Good morning, honourable members and honourable chair. So I'm going to finish off the presentation talking about
innovation and some of the key highlights. So innovation at the MRC is implemented through both grant mechanisms as well as specific hands-on assistance with commercializing and developing products. So some of our grant mechanisms include seed funding and the SHIP program, and then we have our tech transfer office, our Global Health Innovation Accelerator, and the Medical Device and Diagnostics Innovation Cluster Program, which all drive innovation activities through the MRC. And these are just two examples you can see of genetic testing and using algorithms for ensuring correct treatment in breast cancer, and the UmbiFlow device, which I think is well known and is saving babies' lives by checking for placental insufficiency. The mRNA Technology Transfer Hub is a new initiative started last year. The MRC is driving Objective 3, which is to develop new mRNA-based vaccine candidates for COVID and other diseases and feed them into a manufacturing pipeline that will happen in South Africa. And this slide really just shows the development pipeline and that we are investing in local institutions who are contributing to the different parts of this value chain in the amount of around 20 million euros over 5 years from DSI funding, MRC funding, and funding coming through MPP, the Medicines Patent Pool, and other funders. So this mRNA-based mRNA Technology Transfer Hub and investments by billionaire Patrick Shun-Sin-Chung have really illustrated the need to build a manufacturing workforce in South Africa for biomanufacturing, given the large increases in local production that are either planned or in progress. So this is an investment that will come to the MRC. It's around 100 million rand over 3 to 4 years, and the MRC is contributing funding towards that as well. So, and it really stemmed from a landscape analysis showing that there's this unprecedented new activity in vaccine manufacturing, and there's this going to be this need for more than 600 skilled scientists to be able to actually implement the manufacturing and to develop the vaccines and to make sure that we can produce quality vaccines and other biologicals. As I mentioned, the funding will come to the MRC. We will have a steering committee that oversees this, and we are currently designing the program. In the next slide, you will see the three key components of this. There'll be students, studentship or internships, which will train the limited skilled scientists in molecular biology techniques and process engineering to be able to work as technicians and scientists within these biomanufacturing facilities. In the middle are the higher levels trained scientists with MSCs and PhDs who will feed the pipeline and also focus on the discovery side. And then finally, we'll look at a scholarship or fellowship program to bring or to encourage skilled African scientists working abroad to return to South Africa and work in this field. And then just to finish off, some key achievements which are shown through these various photographs, which we'll go through. This is the Sasonke vaccination, which started with vaccination of the president and the then health minister. And if you look in the next slide, you'll see the queues. So there was a high demand and resulted in over 496,000 healthcare workers being vaccinated through a very intense program. There's been a lot of publicity around the MRC's response to COVID, including the results of the Sasonke study and the ensemble study. And in the middle there, the results from the genomic surveillance, which we've been supporting from the beginning, and the wastewater project. The wastewater project is highlighted in the last few slides, and this is really a flagship program of the MRC, sampling more than 80 different wastewater treatment plants in six different institutions in South Africa. It involves substantial capacity development in historically disadvantaged institutions, but also this research translation and knowledge dissemination aspect. And this is really illustrated through an event which was held in February this year, where stakeholders were brought together, some of the historically disadvantaged institutions who are involved, for training programs, development of written materials and papers around the project, dissemination of these materials, translation into different languages, and mobilization to get this information to the communities, but also to the policymakers, where they can be translated into concrete actions to address what's coming out of the program. And these are just some of the visuals coming out of the that event, which really resulted in a number of individuals from these institutions who are involved being trained, not just in the science, but also on the knowledge dissemination side. Also, a month ago, we held the MRC Scientific Merit Awards, which honor scientific leadership and excellence within South Africa through Platinum Awards, Gold, Silver, and Bronze Awards, and the Presidential Award. And this was a hybrid event held to honor these scientists. And then finally, we've spent some time, despite COVID, meeting in person with a number of international delegations, which have been very important in expanding our international partnerships on the continent and more broadly. So this was a delegation from Kenya, particularly colleagues from KEMRI, to look at opportunities for collaboration. And this was a delegation from the European Union, including German and Belgian government, KfW and others, to look at, again, forging collaborations and particularly around the mRNA hub.
And then just quickly, Chair, I'll just say two slides. So obviously we watch the media in our and make sure that we're not involved in any negative media. And this slide just shows our monthly media reviews. And this is February, either positive or neutral, and spending around, let's just go to the next slide. You know, our media influence contributes about eight million rand worth of emphasis or impact. And this just shows you the various things. We've got a lot of press on the mRNA hub and excess deaths. And then, you know, the MRC social media in Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn. And we just want to thank you for this and appreciate your patience with us as we had to deal with a couple of power outages and load shedding. And so we had to move our computers around and so we apologize for the hustle and bustle in the boardroom. But thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the presentation to you and all of your team there, Professor Gray. There are quite a number of members who want to engage with your presentation. I'm going to mention them in order, and I'm going to repeat this. It's Honorable Sgela, Ismail, Tembekwayo, Siwela, Chirwa, Clark, Munyai, Harvard, Wilson. Sgela, Ismail, Tembekwayo, Siwela, Chirwa, Clark, Munyai, Harvard, Wilson. And then I would, at the end, also have some engagement with you. Honorable members, we should try to finish at 11:55. So I would switch on my camera when you have too many questions to raise. We're already running a little bit behind schedule. So when I switch my camera on, please be mindful you have another few seconds to wrap up if I notice that you have too many questions which you ask. Thank you very much. In that order.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me welcome the presentation from MRC. I've got a few questions that I want to ask, Chairperson. My first question, the coronavirus pandemic has demonstrated the importance of research and development funding and support for innovation. What lessons has the council learned from the pandemic experience, and how can the council sustain a higher level of impact as demonstrated by our scientists in responding to the pandemic and other health needs? My second question, Program 4 is a critical program for the nation and as a building human capability and capacity enabling sustainable development. What is the level of demand for the financial support by the entity, and what percentage of applicants get awarded funding for research and for academic learning? My third question, the year 2020-2021 has demonstrated the repeat increase in impact by the council in all four output indicators of Program 5, focusing on translating new knowledge into policies and practices to improve health. The current year and the outer year are projected to be relatively constant. What support can enable the council to increase its impact in this program, as this program reflects the impact of research undertaken by the council? My last question, Chairperson, what will be the impact of the projected 0.3% decrease in the total revenue in the medium-term expenditure framework, and what other streams can the council develop in order to increase its revenue base? Thank you, Chair.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, everybody, and thank you for the presentation. And, you know, a huge thank you to the MRC for the good work that you are doing. I just have a few clarity-seeking questions. My first question, please advise what type of scarce critical skills does the MRC use? My second question, where is the 55.7 million rand funding required for the 8 infrastructure projects going to be sourced from? And please advise, you know, if any budgets have been approved for these major projects. My last question, to what extent has the MRC traversed on finding a breakthrough for various types of cancers in the country? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. I've got only one question based on priority 6, the representation of designated groups across occupation level, specifically the HR transformation practices. And furthermore, you expanded the definition of transformation to include past, present, and future. But under staff profile for 31st March, specifically under top management, there still exist gender disparities. Under top management, there are only 3 Black African males versus 0 Black African female. Explain why is it like this, and when are you going to make sure that there is gender balance in top management post? Thank you, Chen.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also welcome the presentation and thank the entity for its good work. Chair, I have got a few questions. The first one is, what is the progress on the implementation of the Employment Equity Plan, and what challenges does the entity experience in relation to transformation? The second question is, noting the weakness of the South African Medical Research Council of lack of biostatisticians, what is the council doing to ensure that it develops biostatisticians, and what is the training capacity of the council, and how many graduates are absorbed yearly? Thirdly, what research is the entity undertaking on indigenous knowledge system and their promotion? What are the causal factors of the lack of synergy between intramural researchers? And lastly, what are the factors contributing to the lack of exploitation of collaboration with national entities to enhance health research, and which entities is the council currently collaborating with? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to my colleagues and the SAMRC. Thank you so much for your presentation. I would like to know, because I see in the document you sent us, you note neonatal deaths as a persisting issue, besides the usual issues with infrastructure, negligence, lack of human resource and public health facilities. What is the other contributing factor to this persisting issue? And number two, I want to ask about the nature of the MOU you entered into the NIH of America. What do we benefit from it? Why is it important? I'm asking because the NIH actually lists the SAMRC as one of their top funders. So are you funding them, or were you funding them and then you got into an agreement? In what capacity are you funding them? Because they list you as one of their top funders. And I want to know what this thing of us funding America is through the SAMRC. And how much have they invested back? Because I see you put 45 million rand there as the money you're spending on this agreement with them. How much are they investing back into this partnership that you have with them? And number three, I want to find, like, the funding demographics are still not clicking. And this is a persisting issue. Like, now I think I'm going to raise issues that we've pretty much raised before from 2019. And I think that's why it's important to raise them again, because they're not being addressed properly. From 2019, what has been the increase in ratio in the amount of Black people you are funding? So what's the difference between 2019 and 2022 in the percentage that you are funding Black people as compared to 2019? And subsequently, are you still funding more white people at a higher percentage than their ratio that they represent demographically? Because to say we are funding 72% of Black people and we are funding 15% or 20% of white people is still not justice. We are in a country that requires equity to fix the mistakes, not even the mistakes, to fix the crimes of the past, which have still not been addressed. So equality would be 80% of funding going to Black people. That would be equality. Equity, on the other hand, would require a much higher margin. And you're not reaching this particular margin, even though we've been raising it for the past 3 years. You guys are about to exit in 6 months. You've essentially failed in this term to deal with the issue of transformation. And I want to know what the insistence is on failing, because you can just make these decisions and fund 80% minimum of Black people on new entrants and stuff like that, and fix the issue of top management. Because the last time you said you had a step aside a situation, what has been the update since 2019? How many people have stepped aside since 2019? Because the fact that we are still on almost 50% in top management, it is honestly just bad that it's still the case even today, because these are issues that were raised in 2019. In 2019, there still isn't solid, tangible evidence that you're working hard to address the issue of transformation. You are the worst performing entity when it comes to transformation. Literally, of all the entities in the NTOH, SAMRC is the worst performing when it comes to transformation. What is the insistence? Because it's not like we're telling you new things. These are not new things. These are not new concerns. These are not new questions. Why are you not doing it? Why are you not transforming the top management? And there shouldn't be anything peculiar about the SAMRC, because other entities are doing it, even outside of the Ministry of Health. Why is transformation such a bad, like, why is it such a hard thing? Why is the insistence to keep the top management white in South Africa? And then lastly, I want to find out on the adverse effects of vaccination. According to your monitoring, what kind of depth do you guys apply to research the issue of adverse effects? How are the monitoring systems for this? Is this information only gathered through the reported cases that are reported to you? Or is there like a more in-depth and ongoing investigation and analysis on the health of persons who have been vaccinated? What have been the most common adverse effects in South Africa? And how many people of the investigation or the analysis or the study was this based on? Please also share the ratio concerning this particular thing. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable members, I'm going to make a request. I see many of you do not switch your cameras on.
That's a problem. Yeah, with the data, Chairperson, you know, with our bandwidth is so low at the moment, we're battling here.
It's load shedding, it's network issues in the township. Those are ANC problems. Maybe you should ask the ANC government why they aren't resolving these problems that are affecting our work. If you're going to ask a manipulative question, expect a manipulative answer.
This is not what I was asking for. Please respect my position here. Not what I
have context in your questions. Otherwise, don't ask us questions that we don't have power of.
No, you that's don't have the power to here. Talk like
we can't
you
make
do.
Up what Honorable the presenters are saying.
To,
we keep getting
I'm
kicked out because
now.
There's load
Honorable
shedding.
Chirwa,
do you not know there's load shedding in South Africa and that it's affecting businesses and also our work? Do you not know this?
Thank you. Honorable Clark, please continue.
Thank you, Chairperson. A major focus mentioned in the APP is a focus on the top 10 causes of death. Can you kindly list the top 5 current causes of death in South Africa? Under the NHI, do you foresee the risk of diminishing funding increasing? Does the entity have a plan in place to mitigate this risk? 3. For the 22-23, there is an estimated decrease in the number of accepted and published journals. What are the reasons for this estimated decrease? 4. Once the NHI is implemented, do you foresee funding for research and innovation to diminish? If so, what are the associated risks? Then 5. Can you confirm that the sugar tax that is levied by a national government is used in terms of diseases like obesity and diabetes? And what programs have been put in place in order to assist to mitigate these diseases in order to assist in terms of treatment? Then just in terms of mental health, if you could just give me clarity in terms of mental health. Many hospitals we visited, you know, we find that mental health wards are overcapacitated and that patients have to be placed into overflow wards because our hospitals just can't cope with mental health and in particularly in terms of substance abuse and what is being put in place to try and assist to mitigate the causes of mental health. And then I'd just like to get a clarity seeking question in terms of COVID currently. You are saying that your funding has been cut by national government. Will you be able to continue your research and how would you maintain your research in terms of new variants that emerge? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much indeed, Honorable Chairperson. I must welcome the powerful presentation and the progress that SAMRC has made beyond any other institution within the Republic. First and foremost, Honorable Chair, it is the only organization that generated a new generation of scientists, African scientists, Indian scientists, colored scientists, white scientists, South African scientists, proudly South African scientists. By the way, I must proudly say that the Constitution of South Africa want to see this country to have the black and white diverse South Africans, not one single race over the other. And we appreciate your concentration on the transformation of the new scientists. There's no need, Prof. Glenda Gray, for you to step any down anyhow. You still have a long way to do. If you are doing a great work, who must appreciate it, and you must stay on and hold on and continue to serve this country, especially with pandemic of COVID-19. My first question is the following. The mRNA, this is a messenger technology transfer app has potential to developing the product domestically. How is this project going to increase other innovation in the ecosystems and in the ecosystem? And how can we, how can as the nation optimize on this potential of genomic medicine in the context of the RNA messenger? Thank you. Especially vaccines, because there's issues of genetics transformation. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I just have a few questions. Also, thank you for the presentation. That's fruitful. First one, what is the strategic alignment of MRC with the Department of Science and Innovations, decade plan, and how integrated is the council with the national and the continental innovation system? Second one, how can the council increase research and development investment into the South African economy? And what is the extent of the current impact of the entity in relation to RD? Third question, the research grant awarded by the council is constant at 750. Why is this target not on the incline, noting the importance and the need of increased funding for research? Last question, the projections of program 2, focusing on leading the generation to new knowledge, is relatively declining in relation to the number of accepted and published journals, such as articles and book chapters and tea by grant holders and the journal articles published with the first or last author relative to previous financial years. Why are the projections declining than increasing? I thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the SAMRC. If nothing else, your presentations are always extremely thorough and very, very well presented. And we must give credit always to a job that is well done. And I think that the MRC does tremendous work. In principle, I'm covered by colleagues who've spoken before me. I would just like, and it's always a major concern, and I think this was raised by the Honourable Clark with regards to the highest number of instances of death, and in particular, I'm interested in cancer. Over the last couple of years, in your presentations, you discussed extensively the increase of cancer and the causes of cancer. And if you could just share us some of the statistics that you've got in terms of the increase of cancer. We did see big increases at one stage. But as for the rest of my questions, they are answered. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Any other member I had left out?
Sorry, Chair. I did speak about cancer. I would also appreciate we are seeing, or I am seeing, and I'm not sure if everybody else is, a huge increase in cases of Parkinson's disease. Any information they could share with us with regards to Parkinson's and what the causes are, or why we're seeing increases in Parkinson's, I'd appreciate that too. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. And let me also welcome the presentation and thank you for a wonderful and thorough presentation that you have done this morning. I have a number of issues and questions I want to raise with you. The first one is about your position, the position of the Council on the trade-related aspects of intellectual property rights waiver to enable domestic manufacturing of vaccine, therapeutics and diagnostics in the country and the continent to meet Africa's health needs, and what work is the Council undertaking in this regard? Noting that in South Africa, full operationalization of the mRNA hub has been hampered by intellectual property barriers. What are these barriers and how are they being addressed to unlock growth? And how is the council going to ensure that the Chan Soon Shiong Foundation partnership develops domestic manufacturing value chains in the biomanufacturing sector to ensure inclusive economic development? What is the level of uptake of research and innovation produced by the SAMRC, by other government institutions, and does the council find the uptake at the required level? What are the plans of the SAMRC to support the development or the department on the development of a functional and effective state pharmaceutical company, Ketlapela, and what partnerships can the council develop with Ketlapela if none exist? And finally, it has been raised on the your senior management representation, by when would you be have this equity going to have this representation corrected at the senior level in terms of the demographics of South Africa? And without you, of course, losing any necessary expertise from the organization. There are many questions which now have been raised. We are 10 minutes past 11, Professor Glenda Gray. I'm still going to maintain. I'd like to have this meeting completed by 5 minutes to 12. You're very welcome to respond to all of these points which were raised. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Chair. I think what we'll do is, we'll go across the room and I'll start with some of the questions, and then there'll be others that will expand on some of them, and we'll ask. I think we need to pick up that picture on the transformation of the top management. Maybe show that picture again. So just to start off with Honourable Member Gela. She asked about the importance of coronavirus research and what lessons have we learned and how can we sustain this high level of impact. So I think the importance, we learned a lot of lessons, the importance of surveillance, both human surveillance and surveillance of wastewater, which we can take forward in the future. We learned about the importance of investment in local diagnostics, and working with SAHPRA to register these diagnostics and to make sure that we supported the introduction of high quality diagnostics in South Africa. We also learned about the value of good robust clinical trials in evaluating either repurposed drugs or new drugs and their role in COVID-19, as well as the importance of collaborating on COVID vaccine research. And these lessons we can take forward in apply this not only into infectious diseases but also into non-communicable diseases. So I think the surveillance is important. We've heard about cancer, we've heard about increasing incidences of Parkinson's, and we've heard about the role of other non-communicable diseases. Surveillance is very important. And so, we will need to work with NAPISA. And if it gets established, and with the NICD to make sure that we understand the burden of disease and how it's changing over time. And I think coronavirus, the COVID-19 has helped us. It also has highlighted the gap in our ability to make vaccines and drugs. And we can get onto that with a state-owned company and with the mRNA hub, and that we have to invest beyond just establishing the value of the drugs or therapeutics, but also make sure we're involved in the manufacturing and distribution. But therein also lies the issue around the politics of global procurement and how we have to build in redundancy if we are going to go into that field around vaccine development. The issue around capacity development. So the question was, what is the level of demand and percentage of applicants who get awarded? So basically, we're seeing an increase. So first of all, we've invested a lot in this capacity development, and we're seeing an increase. I think slide, if you look at slide 67, it's over there. You're seeing an increase in the budget that we have put in to capacity development from 61,000 in 61 million in 2018-19 to 88 million in 2020-21. These programs are peer reviewed, so we have on an annual basis we have calls for students to apply. There's a peer review process and a process that is governed by steering committees that evaluate each candidate to make sure that we're funding in the areas that we need to fund, and we're funding in the institutions that we have to fund in, and we fund in the demographics to take into account some of the issues around transformation. So that, just to answer that question, in terms of 2021, if you can see, do you want to answer that question and answer it?
Okay.
No, you can answer it.
Okay. That's honorable member. So the question was around the outer years in terms of the Goal 5. I have to indicate that Goal 5, in some instances, is embedded in terms of funding within other strategic goals, particularly strategic goal number 2. And so you've asked us what support is needed to increase the targets. As we've indicated earlier on, this is a new goal that we didn't have before. And given the fact that the funding is decreasing, as Nick has indicated, we were a bit conservative in terms of what we can achieve. However, we are looking at other avenues to allocate funding to this strategic goal, and we can certainly do that once we've got funding and try to adjust our targets for the MTF period going forward beyond 2022 and 2023.
Yeah, and so the question about the impact of decreased revenue will mean less research unless we can leverage our capabilities with other people. We continue to look at other streams, and maybe Shelley will talk about commercialization aspects, issues around commercialization and how we can bring in other revenue streams. So she'll talk about that. The Honourable Member Ismail spoke about what scarce skills do we see. So we see, so depending on the area of it that we're looking at, we see a multiple shortage of skills. And I think our biggest at the moment, if we want to position ourselves for the fourth industrial revolution, our biggest scarcity of skills is in big data. So that's biostatisticians, bioinformaticians, and people who can manage metadata. And which includes IT support in that. And we are addressing that in terms of the big data. There are other critical skills in genomics, and we've continued to invest in that in both the wet and the dry labs around genomics, which includes both virologists and bioinformatics and people who can visualize pathogens. In terms of clinical research, making sure that we have well-trained clinical researchers is a priority for us, and we have a whole aspect of training, and as indicated by the Bongani Mayosi scholarship. In terms of the breakthroughs in cancer, so we're doing a lot of basic science or fundamental science on cancer and the role of precision medicine in cancer, and have funded a lot of programs which Michelle can talk about in terms of our precision medicine program in cancer that's looking at innovative ways of identifying and diagnosing a cancer, breast cancer, as we showed, as well as the issue around looking at cancers in various parts of the country and how to respond. We're seeing an increase in prostate cancer, and we're also seeing a decline in the diagnosis of breast cancer. Obviously, in terms of the current COVID pandemic, has seen a lot of fall off in our ability to use nuclear medicine and other interventions for the treatment of cancer. But Liesl, our VP, will talk more about it. In terms of our infrastructure, we have this is coming from our reserves, And we'll give our CFO some time at the end to talk about some of these things. But the 55.7 million infrastructure budget that has been approved does come from our reserves. And Nick, you can talk a little bit more about it in the future. In terms of in terms of priority six, Honourable Member Tembikwani asked about the designated groups and the issues around transformation and gender disparity. So we are a predominantly female organisation. If you could just show that slide. So if we look at okay, let's just go to the overall part of the organization, self-profile. So generally, at all levels of the organization, we are predominantly women. And that reflects the health sector all in all. So around 70% of our staff are women, and around 88% of our staff are Black. So we have around 10% of our staff are white overall. So we have 68 white people in the organization, 310 African, 24 foreign nationals, 82 Indians, and 140 coloreds. And so we are predominantly a Black organization and a female organization. Can we have the next slide? In terms of top management, and this is the EMC. We are also predominantly women. So we are 62% of top management are females. It's one African, two coloreds, and two whites. And of the men, there are two Africans and one white. So in total, there are three white people on EMC, two of which of them are women. There are two colored people on EMC, and those are also two women. And three African people on EMC, one woman and two men. Let's just go to the other one. I guess the issue around the top management is this senior. So this is senior management. This excludes the top management. So senior management are the people that are unit directors and most of these people have been in the organization and are permanently employed, you know, for many years. The 22 white people seen at the top there, 11 females and 11 men, are mostly people that are exiting the organization as they retire. So these aren't a new injection of white people. These are people that have been in the organization forever and are nearing retirement. And in terms of our senior management, in terms of Africans, there are two females, which we worked, and one male. And then in terms of Indians, it's been four females and four males, and coloreds, four males and six women. And in terms of foreign nationals, four males and two females. The distribution you can see at the bottom, it's around 50-50 between men and women at the top management level. And there you see the pie graph that shows the distribution by race. And our HR manager can talk a little bit further about it. But you know, we can also, in the next time, supply the ages of the people that we're representing so you can get a feel of how the organization is moving forward. So I hope that answers the question around that. In terms of Member Siwala asked about the progress, sorry, I couldn't read my writing, in relation to translation. So I think in terms of, we'll get HR and Angela to talk about the progress made in terms of what are our challenges. Our challenges are obviously the health research, it's a particular niche part of society, and not every most people who do health research come from the health system, doctors, nurses, OT, pharmacists. And so I guess that some of those issues around attracting that kind of people into science, but we'll expand upon that later. In terms of our weaknesses, what are we doing about our weaknesses in biostatisticians? So we collaborate with the NRF, and we've developed a SARCHI chair in biostatistics, and we co-fund this with the NRF to basically bring in a whole pool of biostatisticians. And we also are addressing that by having specific calls. We have a collaboration with Belgium, where we work with them and they help us fast track our biostatistical program, and that's worked out quite well. And we also are looking at bringing in honors and masters students and developing them into biostatisticians in the MRC that can help feed the universities. But it is on our agenda, and we have got some innovative ways to work with that. And we'll continue to work on that with the various institutions, in particular the NRF as well. In terms of the Indigenous knowledge system, what are we doing? We've got a lot of good programs on Indigenous knowledge system, and we've been working with a whole lot of people, and Shelley can talk a little bit about it further. But we've been working with a group of traditional healers in Newcastle who've got some compounds that have antiviral activities, and we've been working with the DUT and them to further evaluate that. We fund an extramural unit on indigenous knowledge system. And actually within the MRC itself, we have a whole lot of programs where we evaluate molecules that have been identified to see whether they have any activities. And we have a whole program on non-communicable diseases that evaluates RKS molecules to see whether they can work in things like diabetes. And Michelle, you can expand on that in terms of that. Honourable Member Chua from the EFF asked about the neonatal deaths and what other factors are contributing to neonatal deaths, despite excluding health system problems. So there are a lot of causes for neonatal deaths, and there are a lot of reasons why very little progress has been made in infant mortality rate, because the neonatal mortality rate drives this. And causes of death in the neonatal period include things like prematurity, which one has to address through adequate antenatal care and trying to maintain to avert prematurity. And there are a lot of causes for prematurity, like sepsis and diabetes and hypertension. So address maternal causes that lead to prematurity. And then there's also issues around sepsis, you know, so there's a group B strep and also nosocomial or sepsis that occurs in the hospitals that contribute to death. And then there's things like birth asphyxia, and that, but the driving cause of neonatal deaths is usually infections in that period, and often related to children that find themselves in hospital for prematurity or needed to be ventilated. HIV also a contributor, and other maternal factors that render, like birth asphyxia and hypoxic ischemic encephalopathy, that are there. So we do a lot of programs in the neonatal arena, and I think how we can really decrease the neonatal deaths will be the introduction of a group B strep vaccination to try and prevent babies dying from group B strep. And Liesl, I think you'll talk a little bit more about that. In terms of the issue with the NIH, so we have a lot of collaborations with many institutions. We have a collaboration with the NIH. We have a collaboration with China CDC. We have a collaboration with the British UK MRC, with the Canadian Institute for Health Research. And in this program that you bring up, we partner with the NIH. It's 45 million from South Africa. And this is matched 1.5 times by the US. And basically what we do is have a request for applications, and South African scientists, together with their US counterparts, apply. All the money, in fact, comes back to South Africa. So even though we contribute 45 million, the NIH contributes 1.5 times more, and all the money is returned for research in South Africa, and not one dime is spent in the US. So in fact, there is huge benefit for South Africa. In terms of other benefits for the NIH, if you go on the NIH website too, you will see that South Africa is one of the biggest beneficiaries, actually the biggest beneficiary of NIH funding outside America. And so you can go look on the website and you'll see that billions of dollars are poured into South Africa for research. And I'll give an example of our COVID vaccine research. So South Africa was an NIH-funded COVPN site. We had 33 clinical trial sites in South Africa, and basically the funding came directly from the US, and it was their trial cost about all in all around $350 million at a global level. We also work with the NIH on a study looking at COVID vaccines in HIV-infected people with an mRNA program. And this funding is around $250 million. So a lot of money for the 45 million rand that we give to the NIH. We benefit greatly from this collaboration and other collaborations of other health institutions at a global level, and not only America. In terms of the funding demographics, I think we can show you the slides on that. I think we'll come back to that, the ratio. But to show you, if you have a look at the program if you have a look at this slide 56, you can see we count the number so we can show you as an indicator the number of Black South Africans that benefit from our awards as compared to the other demographic, the other people in our country. So you'll be able to see that, and we'll be able to count that. In terms of the, since 2014, we've been evaluating who we fund, where we fund, and how we fund. And we've already showed you slides that have showed a marked decline to awards that are going to white people, and maybe we can show you year on year, and things have changed since 2019 quite substantially. And maybe on the next time we have a parliamentary committee meeting, we'll show you over time how the demographics have changed so that you can see. So we will present pie graphs of our self-initiated research grants, of our people who we're funding, who we're funding the RFAs, so that you can see over time how things have changed. And certainly I want to tell you that things have changed since 2019, a lot of movement. In terms of the honorable member Clark, she asked about the 10 causes of death. So during the pandemic, COVID has outstripped HIV and TB as the leading cause of death, but COVID, HIV and TB remain our top causes of death, and they're infectious disease related. The next group are the NCDs, and these are a combination of diabetes, hypertension, ischemic heart disease, and stroke, and then other NCD related illnesses like cancer. But Lisa will talk about that further when we move over to her. In terms of NHI research, will the NHI diminish research? I don't think so. I think to have an effective NHI, you're going to have research is critical. Research is critical to inform NHI, particularly in its various ambits. NHI will focus on prevention and promotive health research, health, which we can feed into. It'll also focus on the management, the early management of non-communicable diseases like diabetes, hypertension, and we'll be able to monitor impact of early treatment of things like hypertension and diabetes. And then also NHI, I think it's critical for the MRC to work with the NDOH around NHI to understand the costing, the financial impacts, and the outputs in terms of curative medicine. So I think that to execute NHI efficiently, you're going to have to work very closely with researchers so that there's a lot of transparency around the value and the impact that NHI has. And so in terms of, in terms of mitigating risk around the NHR, we continue to work very closely, with the NDOH. We are, our scientists work a lot with the costing, with the, financial, the best buys and, the role of various interventions and how much it costs the country. We spoke a little bit about the decreased benefit outputs. These are just conservative. Because we don't know what our budgets are going to look like, so we put conservative numbers in. But you will see over time that depending on our budget, we can calibrate better the numbers of articles that we will be doing in the future. And so just to reemphasize, we don't see that NHR will diminish the role or the amount of money that comes into science. In fact, it should. Increase it because it's critical for NHR to succeed to do health research. The sugar tax goes into the treasury, and I guess it's a good question to ask treasury how what proportion of the money that NDOH gets and the MRC gets is related to sugar, but I can't answer that question at the moment. Mental health is a big problem in South Africa, and particularly post-COVID, we've seen a lot of mental health issues. And so we have an extramural unit that works, two extramural units that work in health, mental health. We've done surveys at universities to look at mental health, and we're doing a lot of other research around the mental health, which my colleagues can elaborate on. I can't read what you're saying there.
Water overcapacity.
Yeah. So we all know,
assistance do we put in
place? In the wards. The wards are overcapacitated. Sorry, that's on my next page. In terms of the health system, we've invested a lot in the health systems research and to try and support innovative responses in the health system. And our health systems research unit at University of Western Cape and in our intramural domain, work with the Department of Health around addressing interventions that will mitigate mental health issues. But it's very important to continue to say that. But you want to say something, Jay? Okay, so let me finish, and then what I've missed, then you guys can pick up. So otherwise I'm losing my stream here. In terms of the issue around science, the new generation scientists are critical, and we continue to ensure that they are diverse. We focused a lot on HDIs and have spent a lot of work in that area. In terms of the question around mRNA hubs from our honourable member, we hope that the mRNA technology will go beyond just the COVID-19, but will help us develop capacity in HIV and TB and malaria. And so once we perfected the mRNA platform and it perfected how it works, then we can start looking at putting different genes and immunogens into the platform to look at other diseases like HIV, TB, and even things like influenza. As well. So I think the mRNA hub, and as well as cancer vaccines. So the mRNA technology is going to be very critical in helping us expand biomanufacturing capability, and that for us in South Africa at a domestic level, it's going to be very important, particularly also around genomic medicine. And how we look at things like gene editing and things like that. Genomic medicine is important, and that's why we established that whole genome sequencing unit in collaboration with the Beijing Genome Institute to create capability to help us with precision medicine. And Shelley can expand on that. There was a question about from Councillor Harvard about whether we work with a decadal plan and the innovation system and the Department of Science and Innovation. So we've worked very closely with the DSI, and you know we helped we reviewed the decadal plan and gave input into it. And myself, I'm on the NRF. I'm on the NRF board. The Minister of the DSI, Blade Nzimande, has put me on the NRF board, and I was also on the on the what is the other board? What is the other innovation? NECI. I was also on NECI as well, which helped develop the decadal plan. And so we have been integral in helping design the decadal plan, and also to making sure that health is reflected well in the innovation system. And we gave a lot of emphasis about that. In terms of how research can help the South African economy, we definitely believe, and Chili will go back into that, about the need to develop local innovation around drug development and vaccines and drug diagnostics. Diagnostics are horrendously expensive and are more expensive than vaccines. And so we also need to invest in developing point of care diagnostics, rapid diagnostics for things, so that we don't have to pay the huge costs from using various platforms that we have to import into South Africa. So I'm going to go on to my next question, and that was from the councillor, Honourable Member Wilson, around cancer. As I mentioned before, I think, Liza, you'll cover the cancer bit, so, and about the issue around Parkinson's, which is a genetic issue, but Liza will continue that. Chair, you asked about the TRIPS agreement and what will work differently, and that is critical, and maybe our collaboration with the medicines patent pool will address some of the TRIPS issues, and also some of our collaboration with people that actually helped some of the mRNA technology. So part of our scientific steering team consists of people that actually developed the mRNA technology, that have agreed to support our own development. And so, in fact, in some instances, we don't have to worry about patents because we're in the discovery zone, because we are working in other areas. In terms of the patents, Shelley will talk a little bit about some of it, but sometimes it's important to focus on what is patentable. And we've addressed some of that by looking at the lipid carriers, which I think Moderna talks a lot about. And then, but if we use our own lipid carriers, and you know, we can bypass the kind of patent issues that some of the companies have put into place, where the medicines patent pool has been working with us, where patents are not going to be implementable for certain degrees. And you'll talk a little bit about that, Shelley, when we go in. In terms of the Patrick Soon-Shiong biomanufacturing, we do have to make sure it's inclusive, and that we develop the capacity to do this, and make sure that we are able to support this biomanufacturing in South Africa. Of course, it's of great concern, because we just read in the newspapers on the weekend that Aspen's manufacturing is under threat because there is no demand for the vaccines in Africa. And I guess that's when South Africa needs to talk about the governance of global procurement, and see how, if we do create a manufacturing capability in Africa, our goods will be used, and that we understand the drivers of global procurement, and that the issues of cost are not the only issue that you consider a product, but you also consider the capacity that you can develop if you are sourcing products from other parts of the world, including Africa. So that's going to be a very important issue. I think in terms of the senior management representation, I think we've showed you that and we can answer more specific questions. But I'm going to let everyone go around the room and answer stuff that I've left out. Maybe start with you, Shelley, with the issues around the TRIPS agreement, commercialization, and that stuff.
Thanks. And thank you, Chair, honorable members. So I will start actually from the end and address some of the specific innovation questions. There was a question on support for a state pharmaceutical company in Caterpillar and what partnerships we have in place. So we have been supporting drug development or drug discovery for a number of years through the SHIP program and through various other grant programs. And our role as the MRC is really to feed the pipeline. So, you know, we see ourselves as developing those molecules which will feed into a state pharmaceutical entity that will produce these APIs in future. Obviously, we will also play a role in supporting the clinical development and so on. So we really are poised to support that state institution or state company as soon as it gets off the ground. In terms of TRIPS, so Glenda has mentioned that, you know, how we are approaching it. To be quite honest, when it comes to COVID specifically, we have not seen to date over the last 2 years intellectual property and existing patents as any barrier at all in terms of local manufacture and development. We've been able to support the development of new diagnostic kits based on existing PCR based testing, but also novel point of care tests, and IP to date has not been an issue. On the contrary, what we've seen actually is a willingness from international companies to share, to do technology transfers, to share designs, for example, for the ventilator project, etc. So I think the TRIPS waiver is important in the grander scheme of things and will be important to be able to ensure local manufacture. But to date, we have not seen it as I mentioned, IP as a barrier in terms of the development that we have been funding to date. So the next one I wanted to mention, how can we increase R&D investments into the SA economy and impact? One of the things, and particularly in the face of a declining baseline funding, one of the things that has emerged from COVID is this us being able to tap into non-traditional funders. So we've been, as a result of COVID, really engaging with a much broader range of funders who would normally fund more in the health delivery space and are now looking to fund more in the development, testing, and implementation phase. And so we have been able to really draw in a lot of funding for research and innovation in the country by working, for example, with Solidarity Fund, Elmer Philanthropies, Michael and Susan Dell Foundation, and others, to be able to bring in these sort of non-traditional sources of funding. And in fact, while I'm on that topic, again, around the COVID lessons learned, what we have found is that with our rapid response to COVID is we've been able to accelerate our processes while maintaining the rigor and the scientific review and the PFMA requirements, but to be able to quickly fund projects. We've been able to leverage off existing investments that we've had for the last decade or so in the HIV and TB space, and they've been able to rapidly pivot to COVID based not just the infrastructure, but the expertise and skills that they've built over many years through SAMRC investment. And the third thing we've really learned is to work in a partnership model. We've been able to, for example, in our COVID diagnostics projects, we meet every 6 weeks to discuss these projects with the DTIC, the IDC, Business for South Africa, Technology Innovation Agency, and with the projects themselves, so that we can not just drive the projects through and make sure that they're meeting all targets, but also plan for the downstream commercialization and uptake. And this has really resulted in at least two of these products now already being SAHPRA approved. And then that brings me to the question around engagement with other national entities. Glenda has mentioned the partnership which has been instrumental with SAHPRA in accelerating the vaccine trials, but also our engagements with SAHPRA on medical devices and registration of these new COVID diagnostics has been instrumental in assisting with the product development value chain, with the target product profiles, and with being able to get these registered and on the market as soon as possible. We also have engagements with the NHLS, and in fact, we're setting up a meeting next week to talk about how we can jointly support projects at historically disadvantaged institutions, which is obviously also a key goal for the NHLS. We work closely with the CSIR. We fund some of their projects, but they also are supporting some of our innovation programs. For example, they're providing regulatory advice and support to our medical device innovation projects. And this has really been had a substantial impact. We've had about 25 companies and innovators going through that program and receiving advice from the CSIR. On the mRNA Hub, and getting back to the IP barriers, so the mRNA Hub, as you know, is led by the WHO and the Medicines Patent Pool. MPPR and both MPP and WHO are involved in substantial discussions at an international level around freedom to operate. They've done extensive freedom to operate searches, identified which patents might may be a barrier, and they've opened up discussions with the companies like Moderna to secure commitments from them not to not to waive their IP rights altogether, but not to sue for infringement. So in other words, to allow for freedom to operate. So that has been really important. And as Glenda mentioned, we've got those people who developed the original mRNA vaccines on our advisory team. We're looking at novel lipids. There is one lipid that is proprietary that's used in the Moderna regimen, which we're looking to replace with locally developed lipids. So we are finding ways. IP is not, there are some barriers around IP, but there are, we're working very hard. We have an actual IP strategy group within this mRNA tech transfer hub that is looking at those IP issues and how to navigate them to ensure that we have the freedom to operate. And yeah, Glenda mentioned how that mRNA hub is going to expand to other disease areas. Not only that, it'll allow us obviously to develop mRNA-based vaccines for TB, HIV, and other diseases of relevance in Africa. But it's also building the product development capability. So the capability to develop and test local vaccines, to do the immunology, to do the clinical development, and to upscale manufacture. And right now it's based on mRNA-based vaccines, but it can be very, very easily scaled and expanded to include other biomanufacturing and other biomolecules. So were there any others that you specifically wanted me to address?
I think we've covered this. Let's go to, I left out one question about the vaccine safety, which I can do at the end, but Liesl, do you want to...
Thank you, Glenda, and thank you, honourable members, for the questions. I'm just going to add some of the address some of the medical issues. I just want to start with the honourable member who asked about the scarce skills, and just to reiterate the fact that we've identified bioinformatics, genomics, and biostatisticians as a scarce skill that we need to develop. And we've developed that not only at a higher level with the NRF and with our extramural units, but also in terms of the emerging scientists that have been either funded or have been now part of the MRC. And the vast majority of those are also young Black emerging leaders in that particular area. So preparing them also to be able to lead this front going forward. That also ties in with many of the other answers where we either have the capacity ourselves or we link to capacities at other institutions around, for example, Indigenous knowledge, Indigenous health systems, and very importantly, health systems across all of these medical questions. The Honourable Member Chiwa spoke about neonatal deaths. Just to give you a sense, the 2021 publication mentioned that new immaturity-related neonatal deaths are at an all-time high at the moment, 43% infection, 26% congenital anomaly, 17%, and hypoxia, 11%. And of interest is that many of those actually relate to the health system. So immaturity is not just prematurity, but it's also, for example, gestational proteinuric hypertension, and then the immature baby being born at the end of that. So there's a lot of work going in, not only from our maternal and child health units, but also our health system units to try and address those. Glenda mentioned Group B strep vaccine, and hopefully some of these vaccine pipelines will now be able to address some of the other vaccine needs within our country, such as Group B strep, such as Group A strep, and perhaps also influenza. Other issues, the Honourable Member Clark spoke about the top five causes of death, and I wanted to just allude to the fact that in our extramural units, as we've mentioned, we're actually focusing on this intersection between infectious disease, TB, HIV, and now COVID, and the non-infectious diseases, stroke, ischemic heart disease, lower respiratory tract infections, and chronic lung disease, chronic kidney disease, and diabetes, and the work that our burden of disease unit has been playing in understanding those trends and also noting some of the mitigating factors in that regard. This is something that we are well aware of. If we look at sort of global trends at non-communicable diseases, and now we're starting to include HIV and almost COVID into that, it's taking over as the major cause of death. And there's a whole different set of mitigating factors around that that we have to consider. A very strong mitigating factor there is mental health. We're well aware of the fact that mental health is a priority at the moment and also has a prognostic effect on ischemic heart disease, stroke, and diabetes. And I just wanted to mention two particular programs there. The one is looking at mental health of healthcare workers that were involved in COVID, and then also the mental health around older people, two very important programs looking at those two focus groups and considering innovative ways of addressing the mental health and understanding what the various mitigating factors are over there. I wanted to address the issue of journal articles. What we didn't show was perhaps the impact factors of some of the articles that have been presented as sort of a cumulative number, and we certainly could do that. What we know of is over the last 2 years globally, some of the journal areas have got lower as people pivoted to COVID research and we had more COVID publications. But we also have found that what we've seen in our performance appraisals is that there are many more papers that have higher impact as also impact related to policy. The Honourable Member Wilson asked about cancer and cancer statistics. Very interesting. If you look at the different parts of South Africa, the cancer incidences are different. Prostate, lung, colorectal, breast, and cervical are still of the most common. And here we also are thinking about the impact of screening, for example, especially on breast and cervical, and then on vaccines. We see differential rates of cervical cancer according to the differential rates of vaccines. Again, raised by our Cochrane review, as some of the systematic reviews pointing to this, and our burden of disease research unit. There was a comment about Parkinson's disease, very interesting, that our member, I think it was also Member Clark, who raised that, Wilson that raised that. And again, we've got differential numbers for Parkinson's disease across Africa. What we do know is Parkinson's is associated with a longer lifespan. And so we're able to see more Parkinson's as we have a longer lifespan, but it's also strongly associated with genomic mutations. The GBA mutation is the single largest risk factor. And as we're understanding precision medicine and genomic research, hopefully we'll be able to address those as well.
Professor Gray.
Yeah?
We are going to run out of time. It's two minutes to 12. I'm going to be experiencing load shedding at 12 o'clock. That was my reason for wanting to stop at 5 minutes to 12.
I think that we're done. I think we've basically answered all the questions. There was one question about vaccine side effects, but you know, those are well published and well observed, both passively and actively, you know, in terms of vaccine side effects. So we have a good handle on the side effects, and SAHPRA maybe in the next meeting can also address some of those issues, because they also get direct reports around vaccine side effects.
Thank you very much for your presentation. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to cut quite short, because you've given us very wonderful responses. Also good to listen to all the sciences and hear what are the programs which are being performed by SAMRC and the collaboration between the different research entities, institutions, and universities, etc. And thank you very much for giving us a proper responses to the questions. But I unfortunately would have to move on now.
Thanks very much.
All right. You're very welcome. Honorable members, SAHPRA has requested to meet at 1500 hours because of a challenge which they are experiencing. I just want to hear your views, and I'm hoping you would agree that we would resume at 1500 hours today for the following follow-up. We're going to use exactly the same link again, and we will then talk further at that time. Is there any strong disagreement? And if not, we will then resume our meeting at 1500 hours. Any very last comment from you, Professor Craig? 30 seconds.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. We've heard, you know, we've got all your questions. We'll also respond and put it in our next interaction when we meet with you.
Yes,
thanks
it's been
very
a very
much.
Robust and wonderful interaction. We thank you. We thank the members. We thank all of those who have tuned in to this meeting today. This meeting is then adjourned.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Recording stopped.